For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free weekly Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, to which you should subscribe if you don't already, just as you should support our work with a one-time or monthly pledge if you don't already. And also, with warm thanks to the viewers in Seattle, who've made that lovely Pacific Coast locale number 10 on our all-time list of views by city. And then back to huddling by the fire, because our top story is the inexplicable presence of winter in winter, despite climate breakdown global heating thingy. Here in Ottawa, for instance, we've been having temperatures around minus 16. That's in metric. So for American visitors in the old-fashioned, it's still above zero, barely, at 3 degrees Fahrenheit. Except that was the high for January 21st, the day this newsletter was drafted. At minus 22, the low was in Sam McGee territory either way. And in case you're not thermobilingual, they meet at minus 40. Now, given headlines like, quote, Arctic blast prompts extreme cold warnings in northern southern Manitoba, end quote, it sure doesn't feel like your grandfather's global warming so much as it does 10 miles to school in a blizzard uphill both ways. And it's not just us here in Canada. For the people living in Fahrenheit, there were headlines like, quote, rare storm blasts south with frigid temps, Gulf Coast to get record snow, end quote, and, quote, warning as life-threatening polar vortex will engulf parts of the U.S., end quote, as, quote, temperatures could plunge up to 45 degrees below average, end quote. If it were 45 degrees hotter, it would be climate. Instead, here, quote, meteorologists expect the overall weather pattern to remain favorable for more Arctic outbreaks at the end of January, end quote. So, as you see, just weather. Down in Texas, where some kids genuinely might not know what snow is the way that we do, they just found out, as the governor declared a state of emergency over the January winter storm. And similar emergencies were declared on the other side of the continent in Arkansas, Georgia, and North Carolina. That one even caused school closures in Sam McGee's home state, where, more typically, the white stuff in the fields is the cotton that blooms and blows. And in balmy Washington, D.C., land of the cherry blossom, what's this? The inauguration of Donald Trump had to be moved indoors due to hurricanes? Drought? Wildfires? Heat waves? No, quote, a frigid weather forecast for the national capital Monday, end quote. However, NBC assures us that, quote, inauguration day is often cold, but Monday looks to be especially brisk, end quote. Brisk. Not cold. Drat that global brisking. And over in Britain, the cold snap or cold spell has turned into, quote, the early onset of winter, end quote, or something of that sort, as fuel supplies go perilously low, end quote, the UK recorded its coldest January night in 15 years, end quote. And as for the fallback, yeah, just a regional cold snap line, albeit a pretty big region, the Associated Press heralds, quote, making art and fun from the ice, snow, and freezing cold in Harbin, China, end quote, with nary a trend or a climate in sight. And speaking of big chills, just in time for incoming President Trump to cancel the American electrical vehicle sales mandate, thus making all of our battery plant subsidies good and worthless, the Canadian government suddenly and unexpectedly paused its IZEV program, which stands for Incentives for Zero Emission Vehicles, with the initial I being lowercase because that was cool and hip when somebody was young 30 years ago. In case you're not among the EV makers and sellers gaping in horror, this program is a subsidy of up to $5,000 per EV car, which is being ended on March 31st as previously announced, or sooner if the cash runs out, which it apparently will, after about 14,000 more purchases, which may take a while. So the government is still ordering us to buy the unaffordable cars we don't want, and we're still not willing, because the whole thing's a government bubble. Gosh, who saw that one coming? Okay, there is one bright light here. Unfortunately, it's a fire. As if California didn't have enough already, quote, Monterey County authorities issued evacuation orders Thursday night after a fire broke out at a battery storage facility along the central coast that the company claims is the largest in the world, end quote. And this one is serious as well as ill-timed because it is, quote, sending up flames of toxic smoke leading to the evacuation of 1,700 people and the closure of a major highway, end quote. But lithium-ion batteries are totally safe. Totally. It's just the fires they cause that aren't, and the dirty way they're made, and the difficulties of disposing of them. Also blazing away was politicians' scripts praising the carbon tax. For instance, Canadian Liberal leadership candidate and former finance minister and deputy prime minister, Chrystia Freeland, suddenly discovered that if we don't like the carbon tax that she spent a decade praising, she doesn't like it either. According to a source close to Freeland, suddenly, quote, she will not fight Canadians on a policy they have been clear they do not support. That's why Chrystia Freeland will replace the consumer carbon price with a system that will work within our federation and will be developed collaboratively with provinces and territories. She looks forward to working together on fighting the climate crisis, end quote. Ooh, talk about having your carbon tax and eating it too. In the newsletter, we also return to this issue about climate whiplash or even hydroclimate whiplash intensifying the January 2025 Los Angeles fires. Because Roger Pilkey Jr. goes into the archives to produce, quote, the San Francisco Bay Area just had its foggiest May in 50 years, and thanks to global warming, it's about to get even foggier, end quote. And then this one, quote, declining fog cover on California's coast could leave the state's famous redwoods high and dry, a new study says. Climate change may be reducing this crucial fog cover, end quote. And Pilkey labels this, quote, the guaranteed winner scam meets the hot hand fallacy, end quote, because, quote, instead of using science to inform understandings of the thing that just happened, we use the thing that just happened to cherry pick which subset of science we decide is relevant, end quote. For instance, drought, fires, or Jeremiah sinking into the mire. And speaking of mire, Michael Mann finally got a bit of justice in his long-standing scorched-earth lawsuit against National Review, Rand Sinberg, and Mark Stein. He was ordered to pay the magazine over $500,000 in various costs within 30 days. As National Review said, it's not much, just a fraction of what they've spent fending off his explicit attempt to use a, quote, major lawsuit to, quote, ruin National Review, end quote. And yes, it's an outrage that various courts refused to apply laws intended precisely to stop such lawfare, and that nothing has yet been done about the absurdly huge damages that were awarded against Stein, but not Sinberg, who Mann called, quote, this odious excuse for a human being, end quote. So, he seems nice. But at least it's a start. Oh, and from our unprecedented does not mean what you think it means file, we hear from Indy 100 via MSN that, quote, melting ice reveals secret buried in the Rocky Mountains not seen for 6,000 years, end quote. And what might this secret be? Why, it is, quote, a 5,900-year-old white bark pine forest located at 3,100 meters above sea level, which is 180 meters higher than the present tree line, end quote. And the piece even quotes Kathy Whitlock at Montana State University that, gosh, quote, that's because the climate was warmer back when these trees grew, end quote. Really? Next you'll be saying that the Holocene climatic optimum was real, worldwide, and puts the kibosh on claims that 2024 was, quote, the hottest year in global history, end quote, or, quote, hottest year ever, end quote, or even just the warmest year on record, or that, quote, the three hottest days ever occurred in July of 2024, end quote. You will, won't you? Or is the Holocene climatic optimum totally off the record? And another thing. Canadians are chronically persuaded that the world needs more Canada, and it knows it, so all eyes are on us, including on the race to see who will become captain of the shipwrecked HMCS Liberal as Canada's former natural governing party goes under for what may be the last time. And a strong contender is former governor of our central bank, and the British one, Mark Carney, who is currently a key economic advisor to outgoing Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and a self-proclaimed jet-setting multimillionaire Davos elite Harvard and Oxford graduate outsider, who his main rival has dubbed Carbon Tax Carney. And while it may be a bit of an unfair test, given what else is going on in Canadian politics, it will still be interesting to see the extent to which this former fanatic for net zero still tries to run on combating climate change, and whether the public warms to any such campaign. For once, what happens here in Canada may really be an indicator of what to expect elsewhere as the net zero agenda unravels messily. And in this context, it's especially noteworthy that at COP26 in Glasgow back in 2021, this international man of green finance launched the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero that aimed to unite the capitalists of the world to finance only net zero by 2050 projects. And at the beginning, banks rushed into its Net Zero Banking Alliance subsidiary, trailing clouds of shiny green virtue. Within a year, over 450 companies with $130 trillion in U.S. assets, yes, I said trillions, had joined. But now they're rushing out, trailing clouds of panicky red ink. The big American banks have gone, and most big Canadian ones had, as part of a general rush for the doors of financial big green that even saw the U.S. Federal Reserve duck out of the network of central banks and supervisors for greening the financial system, or NGFS to insiders, over its mission creep and wackiness. By the time we wrote the newsletter, firms that really need no introduction had fled from GFANs, from Morgan Stanley and Citigroup to Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo, and then in early January, JP Morgan Chase. And the Canadian angle here is that the Bank of Montreal, National Bank, TD Bank, and CIBC, that's the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce, a name from another era, are gone. At time of writing, only the Royal Bank and Scotiabank remained among the traditional Canadian giants, along with some credit unions. Scotiabank also bolted. So, does Carney want to earn on that record of zealotry and malfunction? But how can he not? Pretend it was his evil twin impersonating him? In the newsletter, we also continue our Look It Up series, this time with the NOAA Climate at a Glance website, which, you may cry, we already did 2 weeks ago on the U.S. temperature record. And you'd be right. But we're back now for its precipitation record, and especially the average amount of rainfall in Los Angeles in December and January since 1945. To hear the blame the fires and climate change crowd, LA has been getting drier and drier for decades, especially in the winter, due to greenhouse gases, and that's why the place burned down. But alas, the data say the opposite. In the newsletter, we also return to Patrick Brown, a courageous climate scientist whose whistleblowing on publication bias in climate science we already discussed, because in a new essay, he blows the whistle on the many layers of bias in extreme event attribution in science journals. Now, if you've never heard of extreme event attribution, or EEA to insiders, you will, because the scientist activists who invented the field have intended all along to use it not as a scientific tool to investigate how the world works, but as a legal weapon to shut down the energy industry. And they've come up with what they think is a winning formula that pumps out studies that get massive media attention and reliably give the impression that climate change is making extreme weather worse. Sadly, the data doesn't agree, and nor in fact does the IPCC. But the EEA enthusiasts reach the opposite conclusion by supplementing publication bias with a very strong trick called selection bias. Finally, on climate, it's just birch, birch, birch. Specifically, from the CO2science.org archive, where we wax poetic with Robert Frost's One Could Do Worse Than Be a Swinger of Birches, before noting that yellow birches, or Betula alleghaniensis Brit, could do worse than live at a time when CO2 levels are climbing. Because over a dozen experiments from 1993 to 2007 show that for an additional 300 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere, the average dry weight biomass gain was 34.3%. If only every pollutant was so good for the trees. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I know winter when I see it.